Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. Talking about, starting with the headlines, talking about how the contest of wills, or the you know, civilization being a product of wills, as Arnold J. Toynbee observed, as I mentioned yesterday and previously, I would think, you know, I would better call it a contest of wills. And in the context of Albert Pike's alleged letter to Giuseppe Mazzini, the great Italian liberator, back on August 15, 1871, and how the fomenting of the Third World War, as is outlined in the letter, seems to be in the headlines every day. We can't, it's inescapable. And so, you know, we have these two creations that were helped to helped onto the world stage officially, particularly and perhaps most notably by Britain. And that's Saudi Arabia and British Israel, so-called Israel, which is a counterfeit of the biblical Israel. It's not Jacob's descendants. So, you know, and the Wahhabi influence dates back to before the creation of the American Republic, before the American Revolution. I talked about that, the unholy alliance between Ibn Abd al-Wahhab and the Saud family back in the mid-1700s. And we've also discussed how British intrigue has been sort of shaping and guiding and using this force as a useful political tool for centuries now. And, you know, there was Lawrence of Arabia, but there was also Philby of Arabia. British intrigue. So we have this Third World War. I want to talk more about that. You know, the Israelis, are they just wonderful philanthropic people? Because I started with the headline over at RBN today, and first, it was actually published yesterday, but in first, U.S. endorses Israeli occupation of Golan, votes against 9 anti-Israel resolutions. This is, you know, fomenting a conflict. We see it every day. So what is happening? Skipping ahead, the war, Third World War, must be conducted in such a way that Islam, the political Islam, I would call it, and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, spirit, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. All the countries of the world, everybody's supposed to be drawn into this conflict. In the process, we shall unleash the nihilists and atheists. We shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm. Do we see that shaping up? So this so-called Israel, these two sides of this contrived conflict that is the flashpoint drawing the world into world conflict once again. If you, you know, and this is the last thing I'll say, and then we'll go to the phones. The UNHRC, the UN Human Rights Council, I am not a fan. Nothing UN. It's all un everything. It's the Unhuman Rights Council. Not a fan. You know, speaking of the one worlders JFK referred to. So created in 2006, even it, the corrupt United Nations Human Rights Council, recognizes that Israel and Saudi Arabia are perhaps the worst human rights violators in the entire world. And so if you go to the Wikipedia entry for the United Nations Human Rights Council, you Click on Israel, the section titled Israel, and you see these words. As of 2018, Israel has been condemned in 78 resolutions by the council since its creation in 2006. That's just 12 years. The council has resolved more resolutions condemning Israel than the rest of the world combined. By April 2007, that's just shortly after the creation of the UNHRC, the council had passed 11 resolutions condemning Israel, the only country which it had specifically condemned. And so they have repeatedly sought to make that condemnation permanent, essentially. Why? You know, for Christian Zionists, so-called, or people who don't know, it's because this counterfeit Israel is renowned for their ability to treat people worse than dogs, worse than animals. And now they're training our law enforcement and military personnel to do the same, by the way, which probably isn't a good thing. Their inhumane, subhuman, oppressive, brutal treatment of people. You know, listen to Alison Weir talk about her personal observation that, you know, Israeli soldiers are mortally wounding people because it's better than killing them. Then there isn't an international press outrage. They're, you know, people are just permanently injured and they're not killed. So, you know, we can wound hundreds or thousands, but we don't have deaths splashed all over the headlines. And that usually isn't even enough. Anyway, then you look at Saudi Arabia on the Wikipedia UNHRC entry. Same thing. You know, this is where the, you know, this Wahhabi radical fundamentalist view, it's the wellspring of that. You know, beheading people, ISIS beheading people, as folks have noted, Saudi Arabia beheads more people than ISIS. And that's part of the entry, you know. Hillel Nour said it is scandalous that the UN chose a country that has beheaded more people this year, back in 2015, that is, than ISIS, to be head of a key human rights panel. Who would do such a thing? So this conflict is in the headlines every day. Do we see it? To the phones. Glenn in Philly, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Morning, Chris.
Morning, Glenn.
Can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Yeah, a lot of food for thought here. Begs a lot of questions about, you know, who the players are, you know, what about, you know, Talmudic Zionism versus Torah, Judaism, Luciferianism, you know, certainly the Pike thing. You know, this is a Luciferian thing that's, in their mind, manipulating the Zionists. But here's a Hegelian thought for you. Thesis, Sharia law, you know, all this redistribution of Muslims, the rise of Islam, and the desire to impose Sharia law. Antithesis, attempting to salvage old school American liberty, which probably is not going to succeed. Synthesis, Antichrist implements Noahide laws, imposes them on all the world. So, you know, it's the Sharia, you know, could be, you know, being used to generate a reaction. And then, you know, certainly we're not going to see American-style liberty reinstituted in America or throughout the world. And then as a compromise, we may see the Antichrist impose the Noahide laws as a compromise on all of humanity.
Which kind of gets back to the issue of communitarianism. And when we talk about Sharia, I think it's disingenuous. That whole discussion really, again, gets back to this radical, puritanical view that predominantly stems from Saudi Arabia, predominantly stems from Wahhabism and derivatives. So, you know, predominantly have Wahhabism, Salafism, and Deobandism. And that's where the Sharia impetus comes from. To say Sharia, I think, is misleading to most folks. If we say Wahhabism, then it goes to Saudi Arabia.
No. Wahhabism is certainly the political movement, but the law, the code to be imposed is Sharia, and it's obviously repugnant and would be reactionary against it. But bear in mind, the Noahide laws also, you know, they provide, you know, a different, you know, one set of rules for the Jews and another set of dumbed down laws for the Goyim, you know, and, you know, I could easily see this, you know, we look at the role of the Antichrist and who he'll play in, you know, in Israel and throughout the world. They turn the Temple Mount into, you know, a spiritual religious Disney World with three different, you know, different areas, and one for the Jews, one for the Muslims, and one for everybody else, and all that stuff is going to be going on. But I often think about the cognitive dissonance that Christians may have about Israel. We see the pre-trib dispensationalists tend to favor, you know, want to support Israel. I personally have a very hard time supporting some of the horrible things, you know, that are being done by Israel. I mean, one, you know, white phosphorus munitions, shooting children on the beach, things like this, you know. And for the Christian, I think there's a dialectical tension inherent in the issue, because a Christian trying to, you know, survey prophecies, Old Testament and New, realizes that God has, you know, blindness, that God has a plan. He's going to fulfill his promises for his name's sake, not because they're righteous or obedient. And, you know, the same Israel, you know, blindness has happened in part to Israel, and they've been regathered in unbelief.
Romans 11:25, hardening of the heart.
Yeah, and they've been regathered in unbelief, and they're going to continue to misbehave, because eventually, during the tribulation, they're going to slay the two witnesses in the streets of Jerusalem and give each other gifts. And, you know, the 144,000 will be dispersed throughout the earth, you know. So we know that the same Israel during the tribulation is still, after all these millennia, going to kill the prophets God sends to them. You know, so Christians can't unreservedly support Israel and yet say, and be followers of the one who says, blessed are the peacemakers, you know, for they shall be called the sons of God, and who forewarns us that they will say peace, peace, but there will be no peace.
Right.
Okay, so this kind of qualifies that, yes, they may be the natural branches. Jesus said, I am the vine, ye are the branches. You know, and then Paul says that they're the natural vine. They've been cut off, and we've been grafted in, and the natural branches can be grafted back in. But that's going to happen in the middle of the tribulation, in the midst of a whole lot of tumult. And I don't really see how Christians of good conscience can just affirm current day Israel as they are so wont to do. I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We could probably agree that it's a contrived premise. The whole you know, I think again, the way Jaron Lanier puts it is brilliant. It's, you know, in his observation of the pre-trib rapture and the singularity in chapter 2 of You Are Not a Gadget, a Manifesto, when he writes, if you believe the rapture is imminent, fixing the problems of this life might not be your greatest priority. You might even be eager to embrace wars and tolerate poverty and disease and others to bring about the conditions that could prod the rapture into being. In the same way, if you believe the singularity is coming soon, you might cease to design technology to serve humans and prepare instead for the grand events it will bring. And so we see that soundbite is precisely what is happening in both of those sectors of the beehive, of the colony. These workers are working for these ends specifically, and in the Christian Zionist community, if you will, the talking points are very carefully ordered by forces on high that people don't realize, you know?
Well, hold on about imminence for a minute. I agree that, you know, the rapture, I'm basically at this point, you know, considered pre-wrath and pre-trib positions and all that. And there are some pretty good pre-trib apologists who, like David Reagan, for example, affiliated with David Hocking, you might be familiar, and Perry Stone and some of those guys, even Jonathan Kahn, you know, they would say that imminence...
Jonathan Kahn is a con. I haven't talked about that much on air, but I have privately. No. He's a con artist. So.
Right, but David Hocking and David Reagan, definitely not. They're true pre-trib, you know, believers. And
They need to do a little homework on John Darby and his little creation back in 1830 and the Schofield reference Bible to kind of help that along.
I think the Darby thing is a ruse. I'm suspicious of Schofield, of course. You know, I'm not... But the mere fact that Darby was a proponent doesn't mean that this thing was. If you look at the New Testament, and you know the David Reagan, actually, I was just saying, if you listen to some of the presentations of David Reagan, he does a very good explication of how you know biblical verses would be contradictory were it not for you know, the appearance of Christ in the clouds at the rapture, and then the return and landing on the earth at the Mount of Olives. It splits. He walks through the beautiful gate, and all that sort of thing. How you know it? The non-believers will pick on, say, "Well, this is contradictory to that." No, it would be if there weren't two separate events. But anyway,
just to sort of touch on that, folks. Well, here again, this reminds me of the whole, you know, things like the trolley car dilemma, which is never a dilemma in real life. You know, you have these, what do you call them? The social engineers come up with these false arguments, these false dilemmas to mess with people's heads. And so when it comes to the subject of so-called controversies in the Bible, folks, what you will realize is that you never find these controversies on your own, like, oh my gosh, you know, the Bible says this and I thought it said that. They're always introduced from somewhere, and you don't just sort of happen onto them yourself. And any controversy that you ever happen onto yourself, so-called anyway, is invariably... there's sort of a lesson in it that the Holy Spirit is imparting. In other words, there really are no contradictions in the Bible.
Well,
God doesn't contradict himself.
I would give David Reagan a chance and actually listen to his explanation, because I'm not going to try to do that here. But what we do know is that Israel's not going to embrace the Messiah until they see him coming. And then they will say, blessed he who comes in the name of the Lord. You know, where do you stand? I take it you're not an amillennialist, right? I take it you're not an amillennialist, which is the stance of Catholicism, Lutheranism, Anglicanism, Presbyterianism, etc. But I'm guessing you're a millennialist of some sort. Don't believe in the rapture?
This is, you know, this is muddy waters where we start to get bogged down in.
Well, certainly
dogma.
You believe in the second coming of Christ. No, wait, no.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The word dogma is used as a pejorative and as being negatively connoted. No. A Christian being to be able to still say no. At very least, you believe at some point in a return.
Right. What I'm saying, though, specifically is God tells us in his word that his ways are not our ways, right?
And there are
these perceived controversies like, Malachi 3. I'm not equivocating. Malachi 3, God says, I am the Lord, I change not. In Hebrews, same thing. Jesus Christ is the same. I think it's Hebrews 14. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And yet you have examples where it seems like he changes his mind. The story of Jonah is one of those. Go tell Nineveh yet 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown. Was it 40 days? Well, I don't know. I mean, Peter reminds us that with God, a day is as a thousand years. A thousand years is a day.
No.
His ways are not our ways. So
no,
what I'm telling
not,
you
that,
is,
that's
yes,
not applicable to
stop,
the
Glenn,
situation.
Glenn, stop. I listen to you. Please listen to me. I am not equivocating. I'm just saying there are, his ways are not our ways. And just because
sure.
John Darby popularized a view around the 1830s, which is a fact of history, does not necessarily mean that that dogmatic view is, you know, God's way or God's view.
Wait a minute. Okay,
and it's,
Alec,
it's
and
convenient that that view has been used to basically lull people to sleep. That's my point.
Okay, now see, David Ray, this is the issue of imminence. Now see, Reagan, and also, what you said about people perceiving, let's not forget that most Christians are rigorous, detail-oriented, historically studying students of the Bible, okay?
Right.
Reagan, and Reagan would say imminence should compel people to say that we may have less time than we would think, and that it should work against complacency, because we don't know. Well, once we're out of this world, whether through death or rapture or whatever, we can't achieve anything for God here on earth anymore. And because that would end our
opportunity.
So it should compel people to work, to labor in the cause of God rather than be complacent.
The reason that I don't get too far off onto these discussions, especially publicly, is because the last thing that we should be doing is, especially in these times, I think you would agree too, is creating cult of personality. And so I don't want to look too much at one person or another. I keep encouraging folks to do what I always do, which is go to the Bible itself, get the what I call the secret decoder ring, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Holy Spirit, and that's where you want to start. The Spirit is the one who decides. We are many members of one body, if we're talking, you know, among Christians, so to speak, many members, one body. Everybody doesn't get the same marching orders in the body. Eyes don't do what ears do,
Chris,
hands don't do
turn?
What feet do. So,
okay. Yeah, Chris,
that's my admonition.
But soteriology isn't eschatology. They're two different things. And obviously, there is no eschatological doctrinal requirement for salvation. Neither is there one for prophecy in general. You can understand, you can understand or you could know all kinds of stuff and still not be redeemed. You could know very little and still very much have the heart of God. But then if you're going to talk about eschatology, certainly I would say you at least believe in a literal return of Christ. Do you not?
I do.
Okay, yeah. So there's at least a literal return of Christ. Then the question becomes, does he reign on earth for 1,000 years, or is there no millennium? It's millennial or not homilist. Now,
the Bible seems to indicate that he does, and so, but what does that have to do with the discussion at hand?
Because all of the world events, including these wars and such, all tie together. I mean, it was one thing, you could, and most people, frankly, actually, most Christians don't even witness or do, word in season type stuff on a daily basis, let alone evangelize. So, the primary mission is soteriological. It's salvation. It's getting as many people into the body of Christ as possible. And God has never been saving. This is the other thing. God is not saving countries. He's not saving the world. We see the save the world thing in all kinds of movies and superheroes and sci-fi and stuff like that. God's not saving the world. He never has been saving the world. He judged the world under sin, and he is getting to himself a remnant. Broad is the way, and wide is the gate that leads to destruction, and many there be who go in thereat. Narrow is the way.
Who enter through it. Many be who enter through it. Yep.
Enter. Yeah, well, I was using the memorized from King James.
Yeah.
Okay. an arrow is the way, and straight is the gate that leads life, and few will be there be to find it. You know,
and there's a very clear distinction there between those who enter and those who find. Those who find are searching. Okay. Those who enter could be accidental.
No, he's talking about
absolutely.
If you were sitting, he's talking about God. The point being, narrow's way and straight is the gate. Do there be who find it? And go, you know, and yeah, it's, I don't think the distinction there is entering true. The point is,
I think there's a very clear distinction. There is the matter of intent and action. You're actively searching if you find something. You don't find things by accident.
I don't think an exegesis is going to support that, frankly. The point he's making is the distinction between, you know, the many going going to destruction and few being found. God is always, in any context, Old or New Testament, has always gotten unto himself only a remnant, because that only a remnant will come to him, no matter how gracious he is, common grace or saving grace.
Right, and how do they come? By accident?
Well, that's not the issue. I'm saying he's not saving the world. He's saving those who come to him. And
right, and again, how do they come to him? By accident?
No,
or are they seeking?
The foolishness of preaching. And, you know, just a second. If you're doing soteriology, you're doing soteriology. If you're doing eschatology, you're doing eschatology. They're two different things. If things become uncomfortable, you know, just say, this is eschatology stuff. This is too tricky. I'm going to stay over here with soteriology. Okay, that's fine, but it's kind of ducking the bullet on the question. You know, pre-wrath and the pre-trib people and the return of, you know, Christ, are the most rigorous in looking at, you know, what is going to transpire in the future. But right now, I mean, certainly we have all these carnal, worldly groups and forces, the Talmudists, the Wahhabists, all this stuff. And, you know, the Luciferians trying to manipulate everybody. And basically, you know, we know that they're going to succeed in manipulating, you know, the world into this global governance thing. You know, and personally, you know, I just think originally called with the notion of the dialectical tension for Christians who realize that God is going to do something with Israel at some point, primarily during the tribulation. There's a lot of ugly stuff to occur along the way. I personally can't support, you know, this greater Israel project or what Israel's arguing. Can't support Israel unequivocally when they're, you know, doing things that are so morally reprehensible. And in a sense, I mean, that's not even my problem, because as a Christian, because I've already accepted the Messiah, it's my job to, you know, lead people to Christ, lead people to the Messiah, get people saved. Again, you know, add to the body of Christ. That's the primary mission, certainly.
Yeah, that is the primary mission. We're going to have to go back to the phones. We've been at it for a while, and we probably could continue the conversation for a while. I appreciate the call, Glenn. As always, folks, stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think the supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guaranteed. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. And I wish we could continue, but we have calls stacking up, so we got to go back to the phones. Glenn, I appreciate your call. I hope we can continue it, the conversation again in the future soon. Back to the phones. Rhonda in Missouri, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. I was listening to your archives yesterday, from yesterday's show, and you were talking about Toynbee, and I didn't know that much about him. So when you said that he said civilizations die from suicide, not murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was wondering if he knew who Bernays was.
Yeah.
So I looked up. Yeah, they were born. They were only 2 years apart. But Bernays was born in Austria in 1891, and Toynbee was born in the UK in 1889. And, I mean, I don't know what communication was like back then. Probably pretty good for the elites, right? Anyway.
Absolutely.
Bernays was a pioneer, obviously, in public relations and propaganda. He was married to a feminist who tried to get married women to keep their maiden name, but that's a side note. And Toynbee was responsible. He worked for Wellington House, which was a propaganda agency. I didn't know that. So apparently he was familiar with the whole idea of propaganda. And his granddaughter today works at, his granddaughter Polly works for The Guardian today.
Yep.
Well, she's 71. But anyway,
yeah.
So then you said Contest of the Wills when I did a search on that, I found Battle of the Wills. I found this interesting. I don't know if that's what he meant, but Battle of the Wills, people who try to defeat each other by refusing to change their own aims, which made me think of the New World Order elite, hoping their opponent, which is you and I, will weaken first, right?
Right.
But they, the problem, I think, is that I'm sure most people were raised not to be skeptical, but to trust each other. So, which is unfortunate. I mean, go ahead.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting. You start to go down that road, that concept, you know, struggle of wills, contest of wills. And the operative quote to me that I always mention is, you know, like you're saying, we're encouraged to be trusting. I mean, what I remember growing up, what were children told? You know, we were supposed to listen to adults. They were all given a certain amount of credibility and license just because they were adults. But these days, all adults are not created equal. Not that they ever were, but hopefully that makes sense in context. And now I think you reflect on Nesta Webster's words in, you know, the sort of backdrop of what you're saying. And when she wrote, "It is difficult to write of these things calmly, for to deceive the people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing whether they're being led is as cowardly as to guide a blind man into a ditch." And that's precisely what these people have been doing. The Pied Pipers are brought along precisely to do that. In other words, the people are victimized by their own Pied Pipers in their own little cliques. And that's who Karl Marx was. That's who all of these guys are. And that's why I usually mention the fact that if we're really careful observers of history, we'll notice that particularly in the sort of, the cult of personality era of politics in America, the party that allegedly votes their candidate into office, especially at a national level, is victimized by that candidate, which further induces Stockholm syndrome, which makes them defenders of their kidnapper instead of people who step back and go, wait a second, like with Donald Trump. This is a guy who said, maybe we should take guns first and follow due process later. Let's talk about bombing places to kingdom come and stealing their oil. Who is this guy and who are the people that allegedly support him? You know, this is, you should get people recoiling in horror saying, wait a second, that's not why we allegedly voted for you, but they don't, just like they didn't for Obama.
Well, isn't all politics propagandized? But look, at some point, I think it's kind of like Christianity, right? At some point, I think everybody in life questions the meaning of life, right?
Well.
Well, maybe not everybody, but at some point, it's kind of like taking the red pill. So at some point in your life, because your parents didn't say, beware of the New World Order, what kind of life would that be like? And that's how, I mean, kids are being raised right now with reprobate behaviors being normalized, right?
Right, yep.
So, I mean, who wants to live in a world like that? But if people can, you know, the ones that are red-pilled, share with their children, you know, life isn't necessarily fun. It's not all about fun and, you know, the next fun thing to do. And, you know, maybe speak to them about, you know, it's a battle between good and evil. And but I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, he was probably, well, it said he was upper class, so I'm sure he knew. When did the New World Order idea come about? But if he was alive then, he would have known it. And I think because of the propaganda machine, if you will, they use that against people. Therefore, therein lies the thing, I think, with suicide related to murder. They don't need to murder us because we will suicide ourselves with different propaganda.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. So, yeah, and that gets back to my point about Nesta Webster's quote and how we are being suicided largely by the Mike Huckabee called the intellectual spark 10 years ago. I think he said it very well. You know, to create havoc in the world, you need educated people to provide the intellectual underpinnings and poor, desperate people to provide the manpower. And he said, you take these intellectuals and rally oppressed peasants behind them. He said, the ruling class is the spark, but the underclass is the fuel. And that's what happens. People unwittingly follow Pied Pipers of cult of personality and then realize only after the fact, usually, oops, that, you know, they were being led to their own destruction, their own slaughter.
Right, like through doctors with prescription drugs, they turn to alcohol, or even more interesting is food with MSG. You know, you just ate, but you're still hungry. And then you see on TV the 600-pound life. What? You know?
Right,
it's just,
right.
It's a strange reality. But yep. I think if parents raise their children to be more mindful, I mean, that's not a good way to live, but apparently, you know, we've changed. Our society has changed. No longer can we put our head in the sand and survive. We need to be in defensive mode. Does
yeah,
that make sense?
And,
I think.
And eternal vigilance is in order, like Andrew Jackson admonished. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, and it was never really, Chris, it was never really a level playing field. It's like the elite are playing a game with us, right? And we have to find this out on our own. You know, when you start playing a game, I think everybody should be given what the rules are, right? But no,
right.
We have to figure out that we're having a game played against us. We have figure that out.
We're all getting gamed, and we're all getting played off against each other. And so as other callers, I think it's Art on the National Intel Report in particular, who says that these people are very intelligent, they're highly intelligent, et cetera, et cetera. I completely disagree. I think they're more clever and diabolical and scheming. They're willing to cheat. There are no rules as far as they're concerned, but they want to try to impose rules on others and pretend that we all play by the same set of rules. And that's how their gaming of people works.
And then you got to ask yourself, who let the psychopaths out of the mental institutions, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, why are they? Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, and it's well not said. Fair. It's. I mean, I know what is fair, right? But it really isn't fair to play with people like that.
No, it's not. It's a very despicable and diabolical and evil thing to do. And you know, again, I go back to, it's interesting you mentioned that. I go back to Jefferson's bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge back in 1779, and what he was saying, you know, that here is a way to sort of prevent this. The most effectual means of preventing this would be to illuminate as far as practical the minds of the people at large, and more especially to give them knowledge of those facts which history exhibiteth that possessed thereby of the experience of other ages and countries, they may be enabled to know ambition under all its shapes and prompt to exert their natural powers to defeat its purposes. That sounds like a good idea to me. And then he talks about voting for aldermen. And he says, you know, getting into section 2, be it therefore enacted by the General Assembly that in every county within this commonwealth there shall be chosen annually by the electors qualified to vote for delegates 3 of the most honest and able men of their county to be called the aldermen of the county. So the most honesty is paramount there. And then later on he mentions how important it is that everyone, there's virtue and fidelity, and here it is, section 7. Over every 10 of these schools, an overseer shall be appointed annually by the aldermen at their first meeting. So the aldermen are honest, first and foremost. But an overseer shall be appointed annually by the aldermen at their first meeting, eminent for his learning, integrity, and fidelity to the commonwealth. So if we just started there, with these sorts of contexts or these sort of concepts, then can we imagine people would be, we wouldn't have to do the specific pointing and name calling. We could do what these guys said. They knew. I mean, to your point about when the sort of rhetorical question about when the phrase Novus Ordo Seclorum was added to the Federal Reserve note back in 1935, I believe, which was a curious moment in United States history. But the Great Seal was first designed in 1782, which was 6 years after May Day, when Spartacus, Adam Weishaupt, and his co-conspirator buddy fomented a plot that's been ages old. Anyway. But
well,
if
just
we
imagine
just,
a... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, if we can just imagine a world, and unfortunately this, it shouldn't be like this, but where children are raised to know these things. And then it right. would be like, you know, people are inherently, I think, competitive. So it'd be like, okay, I got a battle, I got to win. I think.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, remember when Key and Peele did their, I've talked about that before, the thing that Key and Peele did about Sports Center for Education, where teachers were, you know, treated like sports heroes and they get $1 million salaries and oh my goodness, you know, this teacher's, but we don't view those things properly. We've been, our minds have been dulled and we've been convinced to view things differently, right?
Yeah, and if these children were raised with truth, then they would want to procreate and, you know, have more children,
right.
And then the civilization won't necessarily die, right?
Yeah,
because they'll
exactly.
be armed with the truth, and they'll be, like, teaching their children the truth, and then maybe then the elite would get tired of playing their little game with us peons, if you will. Okay.
Right. Well,
all right.
They're yeah. driven by nefarious forces, I think, beyond their control, perhaps. Yeah, we seem to be exactly where Bertrand Russell mentioned, you know, about children willing, as he mentioned in The Impact of Science on Society, children being raised, as in Plato's Republic, taken from their mothers and reared by professional nurses, which is,
yeah, and
you know,
they're really not being raised, are they?
No.
They're being thrown
no.
out into the world to figure things out themselves. And then the reprobates
yeah.
come in and you know, poison their brains. And then we got transgenders now who, I don't even want to go down that road, but it's just, it's ridiculous. And it's like, no wonder. These kids have no hope. And that's why they're killing themselves, either with food, prescription drugs, you know, seriously. Anyway,
yeah.
I think if people, now that we know the score, the rules of the game, if you will, if we went on the offensive and not the defensive, you know what I mean? At least we would be aware of what's happening. Because there's some people, Chris, that you try to tell this stuff to. I have a sister who's like, yeah, I don't know. She won't get her head out of her phone. It's like, I just want to tell you something. And she, you know, it's really hard
right.
to speak with people who are so, you know, infiltrated into this system where they just, you know, it's like, but I just want to talk to you. No, I'm playing this game. I'll talk to you later or something.
It's difficult,
you know,
to be compassionate too. And to remember, I mean, two things, there are many, but I agree. It's difficult. It's frustrating. It's difficult to remain patient and compassionate and to realize, you know, kind of like when Glenn and I were talking earlier, I think of Jesus saying, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. I mean, when it comes to the phones, the Simon Sinek little excerpt that he did about, we tell kids they can't have drugs or alcohol, but we'll give them a phone, which is more, it's been proven to be more addictive than heroin. And mm-hmm. so we'll give them that. The refresh rate I've talked about recently, look up MK Delta. The refresh rate on every screen we have is 60 hertz. The light bulbs are 60 hertz. Everything is designed to put people into an alpha trance-like state of mind. And it's difficult for us to remind ourselves when, you know, we're dealing with people that just seem like the lights are on but no one's home, that there is an all-out assault that's being waged on people in ways that they don't realize. And it's actually so bad, and things have been so turned around and upside down, that what is destroying them, or what has been intended to destroy them, that has been sold as for their benefit. It's diabolical.
Hence the propaganda, right?
Yep, exactly.
Hence the propaganda. Anyway, all right, well, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you, Rhonda. I appreciate it. That is the layman's version of what is going on, so to speak. In other words, it's the version, I think, that we can all identify with and relate to, I think. Hopefully. I mean, that's the way it seems to me. I appreciate it. Thanks, Rhonda. Back to the phones. Larkin, Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
My apologies, sir. You're...
That's okay. You'll forgive me. Go ahead.
We should have an hour. We have limited time.
Yeah, I've got a few notes that I wanted to get them in before the holiday here, because I think they might be helpful to somebody. But you mentioned some quotations from Toynbee of recent, and you spoke of power, or will rather, and suicide. You know, Toynbee would have been familiar with the work, for example, of Emile Durkheim and his bestseller, 1897, called Suicide. Remember, he came up with this word called anomie, which is akin to this word, normlessness. So, I mean, we're talking about people who are keenly interested in how to perhaps suicide a civilization or society. Not are they only invested in the idea of studying suicide for altruistic purposes. And then regarding will, I think probably Toynbee was familiar with Nietzsche. And I got to tell you, in the past 4 or 5 weeks, I've seen a spate of articles about Nietzsche, publications mm-hmm. like Esquire, Time, Yahoo News.
I've noticed some recently, too. Going back further, actually. But yeah, there has been a surge, it seems.
Yeah, it's like they're all read from the same playbook.
And but, Jordan Peterson is a person who cites Nietzsche on a fairly regular basis, too, speaking of that, anyway.
Yeah, I find him irritating. But
speaking of the intellectual spark, right?
Yeah. Here's a couple titles in case somebody wants to check out what I'm referring to. The Innocence of Becoming, Nietzsche Against Guilt is one title. And let's see, I'll think of another one in just a second. But there are so many. All you have to do is just do a search. Also, before I forget, I want to bring up this thing called Discordianism, which comes from the word discord.
Can I mention just as an anecdotal footnote that Emile Durkheim was considered the – isn't he considered the founder of sociology?
No, I think that would be Comte.
Okay.
He was certainly a leading light along with Max Weber. Called a father of sociology. And of course, you know, there's Amitai Etzioni is a sociologist.
Yeah. And it's a short trip from there. Folks, if you haven't seen Aaron and Melissa Dykes's documentary, The Minds of Men, basically, you know, you might consider sociology the social, the sort of low intensity operational arm of warfare conducted primarily by CIA and, you know, partners MI5, MI6, and others. What do you think?
Well, I mean, man is the most studied creature in history, you know,
yeah.
on Earth. Let's face it. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know what else to say. Now, I mentioned...
And you've reminded us on occasion in the past, I remember years ago when you were saying, you know, it's interesting, this studying of man is a fairly new phenomenon in the way that it's been executed. You know what I mean? The way that
it's like a science, you know, or they consider it a science anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I've spoken to the nexus of scientism and humanism as being probabilism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of a important realization that I came to in the past several months, I think. Before I forget, I also want to mention, for whatever it's worth, something anybody can do a search of, the law of identity and the law of thought. Also, propaganda of the deed. And then I think I mentioned previously in the New Criterion, December 1992, the treason of the intellectuals and the undoing of thought. Now, that's very interesting, too, because, of course, they bring up Julian Benda and his The Treason of the Intellectuals. And yeah. I think he contrasts that with another writer and other writers who spoke to the undoing of thought. So there's also a mention of ethical egoism, which I found rather interesting. And then hearkening back to, forgive me for bouncing around and I'm going to get off. He spoke about Mark Twain and this quote that I learned from you years ago from Cornpone Opinions. Mark Twain was speaking about conformity. And if you look up Mark Twain Cornpone Opinions in a search engine, there's a really good article at a website called Thought, THOUGHTCO.com, on conformity. And then let's see. Let's not forget that when we talked about Odierism recently, that was from The Trap.
Yeah.
From Curtis.
Yeah.
He spoke about, he brought up Isaiah Berlin, Berlin, who was a very important British public intellectual of the recent past, positive versus negative freedom and positive versus negative liberty.
Yeah.
I've got one other thing, I'll get off.
Different kinds of freedom, different kinds of liberty. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Robert Lefebvre abstained from beans. He's the primary theorist of autarkism. Lefebvre, Robert Lefebvre, is L-E-F as in Frank, E-V as in Victor, R-E. Very interesting. And also...
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective, and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. Keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.